This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
All right, let's talk about teams not named the Carolina Panthers first. We're going to get to the Panthers in the second segment with my friend Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com, Pick Six podcast moderator. All right, the shiniest object in the NFL yesterday was Tua Tagovailoa rallying the Dolphins from 35-14 down in the fourth quarter with four of his six touchdown passes. So is he going to the Hall of Fame?
I mean, you do have to ask, would you rather have Tua over Justin Herbert and Joe Burrow at this point? I mean, would you? I mean,
yes.
No, clearly not.
Of course, but I would. Yes, absolutely.
Scoreboard. I think the thing about Tua, this is how I'm just describing him. He looks like a very effective and competent and point guard in Mike McDaniel's system. And that is not an insult. It's just that, you know, he took some deep shots. He was like, he's throwing the ball vertically in a way that he hadn't earlier in his career. And if this is what the Dolphins offense is, at least for, you know, the later part of that game, then Tua is going to flourish and Mike McDaniel is going to be the apple of the eye for really anyone who follows the NFL. By the way, personally, I'm petrified of Tuanon. I don't know if you know about Tuanon.
I've heard about it, yes. I have heard it, yeah. Be careful.
It's the cult of people who love Tua and are Dolphins fans and have been tweeting at me not incessantly for the last, 4 weeks.
Once Tyreek Hill said he was the most accurate quarterback he'd ever seen, the Dolphin fan lost their collective mind, and this is where we are. But the Dolphins are 2-0, and like, I'm not going to lie and say that I watched the game because I was watching the worst football game I have seen ever played in good weather because I was watching the Panthers at the Giants. I'm not kidding. This is not hyperbole. I've never seen a worse football game played in ideal weather. We'll talk about that in the next segment. But I was following the score, and I saw the highlights, and like some of the touchdown passes were fine, and then some of the touchdown pass, like the one to Tyreek Hill that was so badly underthrown, but it didn't matter because Hill was 15 yards behind the defense. I really thought that that was probably as much about the Ravens as it was about the Dolphins. What is wrong with Baltimore's secondary?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. It's weird because you don't want to, you know, when you've got Tudon on your rear end, you don't want to downplay the, you know, the success of the Dolphins and act like
he's going to the Hall of Fame.
Not a Miami thing, but I do agree. I mean, the Ravens had like I think it was a 98.7% win expectancy.
Yeah,
in meaning that, you know, they should have closed that game out. 7 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Like, it's there were a lot of this yesterday. This is what the NFL wants, I think, too. It's like to have, you know, these furious comebacks and what Scott Hanson has nicknamed the witching hour. I mean, you know, he's got it freaking embroidered in his blazer for some reason. But like, you know, they this is what the NFL wants and what the rules allow for. And so it's not strange to see these comebacks, but it is definitely a huge concern for the Ravens with that secondary because Lamar Jackson was incredible yesterday.
Yep, he was.
And it didn't pay off.
Yeah, but Jackson had about 400 yards and 1,000 touchdowns in offense, but he was great. But Miami got the stops they needed in the fourth quarter. Baltimore only could muster a field goal, and that was after the Dolphins had tied the score at 35. So it's collective failure. It's also probably a group that collectively sort of went to sleep after having a big lead and knowing that their history over the Dolphins was such that they always seem to have a big lead. Those are the types of losses that I think they stick with you, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I also think it's one of those where
Adam Gold here from my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. All right, Coach, simple. When do we start tax planning in retirement?
We should start as soon as possible because here's one thing, Adam. Taxes are not going away.
Right.
And so the game here is we know the rules. A lot of people want to ignore the rules or act like they don't are familiar with them, but the IRS knows the rules. And so when we get to retirement, they're going to reach in and start taking some of their money out of your accounts. So the secret here is to put a force field around as much as possible by strategically moving some of our money to Roth IRA or some of the other vehicles that aren't taxed, like special life insurance policies. You can borrow against your money there and never have to pay tax on your money that you build up inside your cash value. So there are a lot of strategies here. The one strategy that does not work is ignoring it. So let's make sure to not ignore it. The next 10 people will do for you your very own tax and retirement plan that'll help you minimize taxation all the way through retirement.
800-661-7383. All you got is call, or you can text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda.
I don't think it's gonna be one that's gonna like impact the Ravens over the I don't think that loss is gonna cause the Ravens to just go on a losing streak or anything like that. I mean, I think they were so dynamic. To me, and granted, I'm like very bullish on the Ravens coming into the season. Obviously, I picked them to win the Super Bowl. So extremely bullish. But I think when you look at what's happening with Baltimore, Devin DuVernay is returned the opening kick for a touchdown, and then I think he was in concussion protocol. Yeah. But he looks like he could be a legitimate number two wide receiver. Rashad Bateman is actually morphing into a potential like number one in his second year. And so if you have all this explosive potential with this Ravens offense, you should have to figure out a way to improve the defense. And if they can do that, then all of a sudden they become a very complete team. You start to look around that AFC North, and Cincinnati lost to Cooper Rush. Pittsburgh's offense is just horrific. Like Kenny Pickett is coming soon.
But he's not going to fix that offense. That's the problem with we'll get to Pittsburgh if we have time, but I don't think Kenny Pickett is going to make them any better.
It's a blame Canada situation.
Yeah, it is. Very good. We'll talk about South Park a few minutes in a little bit of time. I do want to get back to Miami's got talent. They built a really talented roster. Nobody thought their offensive line was going to be good enough. It hasn't been a problem to this point. The rest of that team is probably good. So is the offensive line simply better than we thought, or is it just better than we thought through two games?
I think it's probably the latter. And look, credit to Mike McDaniel, too. He's a very good coach. He told his team, I hope we have some adversity in this game. He's like, and they took it too literally. Like, I think he's a really good coach. He knows what he's doing. I would also point out again, like week one, two fluke scores by the Dolphins against the Patriots.
Right.
And they have not fluke, but just like sort of like a little more random. And then, again, in week two, you're supposed to lose the game. Like, credit to them for the furious comeback, but like I'm not trying to insult the Dolphins. I'm not trying to complain about the Dolphins. I'm not trying to downplay the Dolphins. But you have to wonder: is there a little smoke and mirrors to the two victories? Given that you have these improbable two scores in the first game, and then you have these very improbable comeback in the second game. You still beat Belichick and Harbaugh. All credit to Tua. He looks like a much better quarterback. I think the offense is very impressive. I think the offensive line is a lot better than people think. They've drafted a lot of high – they've used a lot of high picks on that offensive line. They signed Teron Armstead. I'm just saying, I think that, as you pointed out, like they're the crown jewel of the NFL Sunday from week two, and I do think it is at least worth, like, wondering, all right, where does this team fall in the hierarchy of the AFC? I'm not sure I put them as high as a lot of other people do.
Unless they beat the Bills next week. Now, what you're suggesting?
Yeah, then I will get a 2-and-on tattoo on my back.
I just sent. Are you suggesting?
Not really.
Are you suggesting to the good folks who populate 2-and-on that the win was stolen? Now, don't answer the question.
No.
Don't answer the question. We'll talk about the Panthers on the other side. Will Brinson, Pick Six Podcast moderator, my friend, at Will Brinson on Twitter. I appreciate you setting me up for my the win was stolen joke about 2-and-on. Let's get to the Panthers. Second straight week, I don't hang their problems on the head coach, but you made great points last week. Like, the whole team is a reflection of the head coach. And I talked in the open of the program that the team looks somewhat confused. They look overwhelmed, much like their head coach. Look, I'm not advocating that they should fire Matt Rhule today. I thought that they should have fired him after the second year because it was not going to get better. I don't think it's going to get better, but I don't know. I don't even know what I watched other than two bad football teams yesterday.
Just two terrible football teams. And
one of them's 2-0.
The Giants are 2-9. Anyway, Brian Daboll may be a very good coach. That
he might be
the lesson to take away from that. When you have a 5.1 to 3.8 yards per play differential, which is what Carolina had over the Giants, you really shouldn't have any business losing and or scoring 16 points. Panthers went 2 of 12 on third down, 1 of 4 in the red zone. They're just not a very good team. And I think the defense has a lot of promise, and that – it sort of reminds me, I said this on the Pixies podcast last night, but it sort of reminds me of how, hypothetically, Jim Harbaugh came into town and could, do his quarterback makeover thing with whoever the Panthers had at quarterback when he came in, then this team could be pretty good. The question is, when is David Tepper going to pull the trigger on firing Matt Rhule? Because it doesn't feel like if, it feels like when.
Right. But I still look at the personnel and go, the offensive line isn't blocking. They don't. Christian McCaffrey is almost entirely on his own. Thankfully, he's great. They don't pass block Baker Mayfield, although I thought it was better this week than it was last week. Obviously, not quite the same level of opponent. I think Cleveland's pass rush is clearly better than the Giants' pass rush.
Yes.
But they still had issues blocking. On third and six on a drive where you had to pick up a first down, you really couldn't punt the ball back. Ultimately, the decision was probably the right one because it became third and double digits, and they weren't fourth and double digits, and they probably weren't picking that up. It was probably close to 20. But on third and six, you can't get sacked. And Baker had no chance. The only way to avoid it is just take the snap and just chuck it into the seats. But he had no time, and it was an onslaught. But they don't.
Well, remember when we were talking about the Panthers as a potential fringe playoff team, and my whole
I wasn't
that was
right. I just want everybody
they're no
to know
longer a potential fringe playoff
I
team,
thought
by
the ceiling was 8 wins. If everything goes right, I said they could be an 8-win team. But that was just my general pessimism.
Right,
mostly
I kept telling people, I was like, look, you need to understand if there are three or four things that are it's very unlikely for them all to work out for the Panthers, and they need all three or four things to work out correctly, exactly, in order to be a potential fringe playoff team. And the main one was the offensive line has to be average.
Right.
And they're not average.
Yeah. Here's where I get back to the head coach, because I think a lot of this stuff was the groundwork was laid in training camp. Why did we waste time with was completely ceremonial and phony? Because, look, I'm not saying Baker Mayfield was trash in the postseason. He was okay. They barely played. But he didn't have to do anything. I could make the argument that Sam Darnold was every bit as good as Baker Mayfield in the preseason, and that the fact that he was the incumbent, I've just made up a word, the incumbent, maybe he should have retained his job, but we all knew what the job was. It was Baker's unless he couldn't tie his shoelaces. And then the same thing with Ike Ekwonu, who doesn't appear to be ready. So if they installed Ekwonu as a starter, and it was after getting abused in a preseason game.
I love Ike.
He's just not ready.
He's just not ready as a left tackle at the NFL level right yet.
Right. So maybe you move him. You can't move him to right tackle because
that's the problem. There's a bunch of it's the issues that it's sort of with the you know, we talk about, you know, with rookie quarterbacks, like, do you want to, you know, you have, you know, you don't want to start a rookie quarterback that bench him. You don't want to start Icky at left tackle and bench and quote unquote bench him, whether you sit him, whether you move him inside, like however you do it. If you believe he is a left tackle and not a guard, and there were teams who thought that he might be better at guard, and, yep, and you could make the case that he would be a better guard. If you move him inside, you know, the issue you have is like you need to have a plan, and I don't know that the Panthers necessarily have a plan. It doesn't feel like they rarely does it feel like they have a plan
for anything. Here's the other thing about Baker. You tell me if I'm wrong, like, because I'm not blaming the loss on Baker Mayfield, but there were plays to be had that he didn't make. I thought they kept calling it a back shoulder throw. I forget actually who caught the pass up the left hash. That, to me, there was plenty of room to throw it out ahead of the receiver on the right side, and maybe it's a bigger play. But I thought Baker was mediocre at best in the game. He made some good throws, but I also think he missed some open receivers, and that completion, to me, was a bad throw. Just got away with it.
Baker's been somewhere in between good Baker and bad Baker, and probably closer to bad Baker for most of the year. I mean, there have been moments, of course, like last week, you know, when he ran in, like, I could have run that in. Then he hit Robbie Anderson on the busted coverage play.
Right.
It brings him back, you know, gets him, you know. Like, there's been good Baker moments, but maybe to your point about the quarterback competition, like getting him the reps with his teammates – and getting everybody on the same page would have been a much better idea than pretending to, like, to go through this little rigmarole of deciding who's going to be your starting quarterback between him and Darnold, when you knew, everyone knew for weeks that it was going to be Baker.
The whole thing was just a waste of everybody's time, and there weren't enough reps. So maybe it's still a learning process and all of that. So Saints come in this week. The Saints look
By the way, Mike Evans suspended one game by the NFL.
Really? Well, you come off the bench to get into an altercation, you're going to get suspended.
He and Marshall Lattimore really, really do not like each other.
Well, I'm not sure whose side I'm on there. I don't know either of them. I don't have any reason to dislike either of them.
I like both of them. I'm just saying they don't like each other. It's like the second time Mike Evans has sprinted like 60 yards with two different quarterbacks. Like, second time he's sprinted 60 yards to punch Marshall Lattimore.
It's probably not unusual for wide receivers and defensive backs to dislike each other.
This one is pretty deep and seated, I think.
I hope there's a backstory that we're going to get in a 30 for 30 one day. Saints offense looks kind of like a mess.
Yeah.
Cardinals, I don't know what to make of the Cardinals, but you and I are going to talk about the Cardinals in the next segment. And the 49ers, now with Jimmy Garoppolo back at quarterback. Holy, how serendipitous is that? They couldn't trade him. They wanted to trade him. They tried everything to trade him. They had him practicing, like, on a field in El Segundo. Right? Well, he wasn't anywhere near training camp.
He's, like, by himself, a solitary figure, cut, like, throwing passes in a net by himself in a field, like, 500 yards away.
Couldn't trade him, and now he's the guy. And it looked like the players really were excited about that. All right, so let's Bucks, Saints. Defensive struggle, to me, that's the way Tampa's going to have to win for a while. They don't look like they have a great offense. I think they can run the football a little bit. Tom Brady makes some plays. But, man, that game was 3-3 into the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
Just
I will say with the Bucks, though, like, they're stacking wins despite a bunch of injuries on offense.
No question.
And defense looks really good. And they're going to get healthier and get better on offense down the road in this season, and just the way the rest of the division looks, if you were worried about your Tampa, NFC South futures, you know, a few weeks ago, you shouldn't be worried right now.
I totally agree. I still think the Saints are good. I really do think the Saints are good. That was a game they had to win, and they did not win it. There's a lot of new moving parts in the NFL. A lot of new head coaches. A lot of teams that thought they had made the additions to become better. Let me ask you this. Speaking of a new head coach.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19th, 2006. But it all started May 6th, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. the Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
Did the Las Vegas Raiders get broken on the two-point conversion by Arizona that made it 23-15? The Raiders were dominating that football game. Did they get broken on that play, which was the full Kyler Murray effect?
Yeah, it was Kyler. I think I heard Scott Van Pelt call it Kyler Murray in a nutshell. I believe he ran 84 yards. The play lasted 21 seconds, which is just outrageous.
Yes.
And he ran 84 yards to convert a two-point conversion, which, it's insane to think about. And, I think that game is so weird because the Cardinals had no business winning. They converted what felt like 15 fourth downs. The two-point conversion is just a killer. I think another two-point conversion. That loss feels like it might sit with the Raiders for a while. It's one of those where you look back at this game. We asked this question, which team between the Cardinals and the Raiders, not which team is better, because I think the Raiders are probably the better team, but which team is in better off, given their divisional circumstances? And the answer is the Cardinals.
Yeah.
If you're the Raiders, you can't lose that game when you're in this impossible AFC West.
We saw a lot of leads get blown. The Ravens blowing a 35-14, 21-point fourth quarter lead. First team in, 20 years to lose that lead. There was 711-0 if you had a 21-point fourth quarter lead. That was the record for teams in that situation. The Raiders lose. They were at one point leading 23-7 in the fourth quarter. The Browns, I'm not going to say somehow, because that game, scoreboard-wise, was tight. If Nick Chubb doesn't score the touchdown to make it 30, they missed the extra point on the low. That missed extra point obviously mattered. But if he doesn't score that touchdown, the Jets do not have enough time to score twice. The Browns can basically run out the clock. But he scores
the touchdown. The game's over. And Nick Chubb in 2010 actually went down at the one-yard line. Instead of he ran 59 yards and stopped at the 1 yard line and sat down because
yes.
He knew that he needed to do that in order to win. So it was kind of shocking to see him score. Kevin Stefanski took the L for it, and several Jets players and coaches mentioned they're like, we could not believe he scored. We thought that game was over.
Yeah, and it probably was over. But see,
no, 2,333 consecutive NFL teams had won with a 13-point lead with a minute 50 or less in the game. I believe is the stat, and now the Browns. The Browns blew it. The last team to blow such a lead was the 2001 Browns. Enjoy that, Cleveland.
That's beautiful. Only the Cleveland Browns can do that. What's worse is that they did it to Joe Flacco and the Jets. Here, two things about that game, and I didn't watch the game, just watched the highlights, but two things jump out to me. One, I'm not sure Cleveland knows what coverage is. I could not believe how many receivers were wide
open. It looked like an homage to Greg Williams.
But that happened throughout the game. That wasn't just on the last couple of drives. That happened throughout the game because I watched the full game highlight package from that, and I'm like, why are Jet wide receivers so open? That happened all game long.
Secondary is not great.
Right. Well, that's obvious. But the next part of that is Garrett Wilson might be. For the Jets, the wide receiver.
He and Drake London for the Falcons both looked pretty darn good on Sunday. It feels like the receivers had sort of flown under the radar. These rookie wide receivers probably because of all the wide receiver trades, Tyreek Hill, Devontae Adams, maybe that's getting all the attention. It was a good Sunday for some of these rookie wide receivers to really remind people that they were drafted high for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, Garrett Wilson... He looks pretty special. So, all right, Dallas with Cooper Rush, better than Dallas with Dak Prescott. This is not a hot take. It's just they won and they looked better offensively.
Dallas' defense might be pretty. Dan Quinn.
Dallas defense is good.
Shout out to my buddy Matt Gray. Like the Panthers should probably chase Dan Quinn. Like,
yeah,
fire Matt Rule, go get Dan Quinn.
If that's the move, if that's the plan in the head of David Tepper, then yes, you can make that move now and then bite the bullet for the rest of the season, deal with the transition and all of that, and go get somebody who will make your defense.
Be clear, you cannot actually hire Dan Quinn today.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Why not?
You cannot hire a team's defensive coordinator midseason.
They do it in the Premier League. Chelsea went and got Brighton's coach.
I like the idea of it. I love the idea of it, but I don't think you can actually do it.
Oh, you should be able to. Chelsea went and got Graham Potter from Brighton. As I fold in a little English Premier League for everybody. No, so it will. I don't know what the Panthers are going to do. Let me get back to Dallas. Or was that more about Cincinnati showing that last year was just a hot streak?
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of both. I think it's also a lot of Joe Burrow still dealing with this. You know, he had an appendectomy, but he didn't have appendicitis. It was a burst appendix,
right,
which is a lot worse than an actual appendicitis. And also, that offensive line is not good.
Right.
It's not good
still.
Right now. Joe Burrow, all right, so the most number of sacks in the season all time is like 72 or maybe 76. David Carr, the former Panthers quarterback, but he happened when he was with the Texans his rookie year. Joe Burrow is on pace for 111.
Yeah. Now, it was just like it was last year. So
he's averaging 3.56 sacks per game in his career. That is a huge problem. Like that, he will not physically survive much longer if that continues.
All right, so here's where we have about a minute left here. Here's we're going to have to end. I'll get picks for the two games from you before we get out of here. But they were 7-6 last year after losing at home to San Francisco in overtime. They win at Denver in a rock fight. They beat Baltimore at home. They beat Kansas City at home in a huge surprise. And then they lose at Cleveland end the season, but they had already wrapped it up. So they were only 10-7. They got hot in the playoffs, and this is what the playoffs do. So we then associate the last thing we saw. Oh, that's going to happen again. I think you and I both picked Baltimore to win that division. I just wonder if Cincinnati was just nothing more than a hot streak last year, and I think that's a fair question.
There's a chance that it was like they were just like Joe Burrow just got hot, but
right,
they can still be that team that where it happens, but it's just not a replicable thing. By the way, the Bengals, the first team in NFL history to play five consecutive games, including the like regular season and postseason, and have them all end in the exact same scoring differential, 3 points, which should tell you a lot too that they're involved in all these one score games.
All right. Let's pick games tonight. We have the Titans and the Bills in Buffalo. I don't know if Mike Vrabel's job is on the hot seat, although I've heard that. I think Buffalo. I don't know that they'll cover the 10, but I think Buffalo is just clearly better.
Tennessee has given Buffalo a lot of problems in the past couple of years. They beat them twice in a row. Some people believe the schedule makers purposely gave the Bills like 11 days off as payback for when they had to play on like a Tuesday during the COVID year against the Titans because of Tennessee stuff.
All right, well, and then the other game I think is sneaky, one of the best games of the year in Week 2. Vikings at the Eagles, 10 seconds.
Points.
Yep.
Take the over.
Easy take the over. All right, Will Brinson, we will talk to you next week for about 4 hours.
Sounds good, man. I'll see you next week.
Will Brinson, senior NFL writer, CBSSports.com.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.